Hello and welcome to The Tenth Voice. I'm here in a sunny, warm studio. Well, it's a warm studio, but the sun is safely outside. And behind the soundboard, I have my wonderful wife, Engineering.
Hello, I'm the wonderful wife, who's Engineering.
Yep, see? It's really easy when I feed you lines like that, isn't it?
Yeah, well.
Well.
I'm sorry, I only have about 1 hour of sleep in me the last 2 days, so where am I again?
I'm not entirely sure. Maybe I should take you to Lost and Found. I'm sure someone will pick you up from the station.
Well, I do know that advocacy just drives me no matter what. Sleep is irrelevant. Food is just a fantasy. We're just always fighting the fight. And helping us fight the fight, we have Kate Redmond here in training for the 10th Voice.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Kate.
Hello.
How's your week?
The week's been good. The week has been really good. We had a quiet 4th of July. Made some money this week, and got some golf games in.
Quiet 4th of July sounds like a bit of a contradiction in terms, because if your neighborhood's like ours, people were letting things off till all hours for about 2 weeks beforehand, and there's still some going off occasionally now.
Well, just wait until I put up some new yard signs and disappoint them. So anyways, we have some guests in the studio today, which certainly are no disappointment. That's kind of a rough segue, but I blame lack of sleep.
Your battery is getting low. You can't have a fully recharged segue if you've got that little sleep.
Naruhodo.
So, we're actually abandoning our Japanese theme for once, because we have some wonderful guests from the local artists, music, performance community, and they're going to talk about their art and their influences today and what moves them, and hopefully it will move you too. And we'll give a brief overview of this fall's transgender march that they'll actually be performing at, and tell people later how they can find details on all of the artists and on the march as well. So without further ado, we have solo drag performer Freddie Dolmer Star. And their pronouns are he, they. And we've got two members of the eclectic acoustic cover band Second Something, which is a name I love. I have to do an aside here, because the city I grew up in the UK was referred to as the Second City, because it was the second largest city, and I grew up in Birmingham. So Second Something is an awesome name. So musical artists Pix Timmerman, they, them, and Radius Burek, he, him. And welcome to the studio and to the show.
Did you say that last name correctly?
Yes. I asked how to pronounce.
Oh, very good. I think I misread it. So it's a good thing that you're leading the interviews today, so we can avoid shame. And
well, as long as you don't fall asleep at the back and start snoring into the microphone.
I think Kate will just give me a jab with something pointed if I do. But carry on.
I sincerely hope so. That's an important part of the training.
Hi.
So, welcome to the station and to the show.
Thank you so much for having us today.
Yeah, we're so excited to be here.
Very, very hyped, immensely. I've been looking forward to this for a while.
We may have to decant some of your energy off and give it to Una then. So, I'm going to tackle people. I'm going to go alphabetically. So, Freddie, we'll start with you. What brought you to this point? What led you to become a drag performer, and what was your journey like?
Well, I grew up just singing, watching opera, watching Broadway plays on television, and, you know, just music was always something that went through my veins. Like, I consider myself a drag musician, so drag and music have always been tied together. I started out basically, I hope I'm not rambling on too much here.
No.
Not at all.
We love guests that talk. If you ask someone a question and they just say yes or no, it turns into a long hour for both of you. So the more you talk, the better, unless we go over a break.
Yes. It was just always this evolution, really. Like, honestly, I got into choir in high school, and that led me into being in a band for a few years. I was around 10 years ago now. Years just sort of fade into each other for me. But honestly, all that time, it felt like something was sort of missing, and there was always this thing in the back of my head and almost this other persona that was still me, but was just basically the eclectic forming of myself. And so around, I think 3 years in August now, next month, it'll be my third drag anniversary. And
oh, drag anniversary.
Yeah.
So were you a fan of drag? Were you an admirer of the performers? I mean, what exposure had you had beforehand?
Well, I watched, let's see, Paris is Burning was the first
exposure
to like ballroom drag culture. And that's when something clicked for me. I was around 15 when I saw that.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in a very small town, and so I didn't really have a lot of exposure until then. I think I also wound up watching Rocky Horror. I know there's a lot of things we could talk about there, but
that's a whole show.
It's very,
that's a whole.
It's somewhat divisive. Have you seen the film from the 1960s, The Queen?
I have.
Good. Yes. There was another film later on that also had Queen in the title, but I can't remember it. I think we reviewed it even.
Then in that case, people could go and look at old episodes on kkfi.org and they'll be able to find it.
True. Yeah, that's drag has such a, it's a topic that's very controversial, and I don't quite understand in some respects, but at the same time, if you look at the historical influence as well as the fact that it was an outlet for many people in the non-conforming, non-binary or trans or even intersex community to express themselves and get that window into their soul, that it's very, you could say drag is therapeutic. It's actually good health.
And sometimes it's a gateway drug because people aren't ready to admit to themselves that they're transgender or non-binary, and they can perform and get to be themselves and become more comfortable.
I mean, I never dressed. Being intersex and being trans, I just, for some reason, I never dressed except at the Renaissance Festival. The Renaissance Festival became my outlet, so I could be Lady Una and perform on stage and everything. And so drag would have been another outlet, but, you know, I don't have the voice.
Well, you kind of did medieval drag, I guess.
True.
Because you were pretending to be medieval. But I'm fascinated by the opera because there's not many people that tend to be that into opera, and having that be one of your musical influences is very unusual. How does that feed into your work at all, or is it more for like voice training and strength than just a liking?
I think a little bit of both. I did have a year of vocal training, but I sang ever since I was, well, like 4 or 5. And so it just kind of worked its way in, and I learned a lot of the breath support and a lot of the stance, a lot of just the, bear with me, I will find the word, a lot of the technique that goes with it. It's one of my big special interests, so it really works its way in. I'm very fond of holding operatic notes during performances.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That is incredible, and that's got to be really good for your voice, because a lot of singers overstress their voices because they don't have the training.
I do hear that a lot. It's just like, oh no, why? Just a lot of eclectic influences for me. Frank Zappa's up there as well, Kate Bush, Susie Sue and the Banshees, Nina Hagen. So I love to bring a lot of eclectic influences that some people might not have heard of, because I'm regularly told, I've never heard that song before, but I like that song now because of you. Or I want to listen to more music from this artist because I heard you do a song, and that was really cool. That's just why I do this.
I'm surprised to hear Nina Hagen. Most people aren't aware that she even exists. But,
Well, hardly anyone ever mentions Kate Bush these days. I was 7, 8 or something when she did Wuthering Heights. So, yeah, quite tiny, but I remember it quite clearly.
Oh, wasn't that Jane Austen?
Yeah, but Kate Bush covered the novel in great detail.
I see.
But I think it's time for us to go to second something, because we got to do them second.
We're actually second hand something.
Ooh.
But that's very cool.
Did I make
correlation.
Did I make a typo again?
You did make a typo. I'm going to blame the person that prepared the prompt card. I'll have them fired immediately. From a catapult. Do something interesting.
But moving on.
Yes, secondhand something.
Secondhand something.
We are something.
So did you have a question, Fiona, or were you just stating it for profound effect?
Yeah. We could all say it again. Both. Secondhand something. Everyone
second
together
hand.
Now.
Secondhand something.
We hear an echo machine. Echo
feels good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
You should get your Darth Vader voice modulator, Fiona, and say...
So, is it the secondhand on the clock, or are you doing retreads of music? Is it music and things that are secondhand?
Yeah, we had been tossing around, because we're a cover band, so we'd be tossing around ideas related to, you know, the reuse of things, and so we landed on secondhand, and we're like, man, okay, so we've got the first part of this, what are we secondhand of? And it's like, okay, well, we're secondhand something. And then yeah, I think maybe one of our friends who was around for the rehearsal was like, actually, I kind of like that as a name. And we're like, yeah, we can run with that. Secondhand something. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the sound of it. It rolls well. And given that I had a friend whose car ended up being officially called Nameless because they couldn't come up with the name for it,
there you go.
I like the way that you arrived at the place.
Thanks. Yeah.
So how did the two of you get together and merge your musical influences and become secondhand something?
Well, Radius and I have been making music together for about 5 years now. We went on the first date, and then by our third date, we were playing music. We both have backgrounds in performance. So it sort of evolved from there. We've played different venues. We actually used to do drag together as a musical group as well, which is how we met Freddie. You want to say something, Radius?
New to this radio thing.
We've been on the radio lots of times.
What's interesting about Pix and I is we both come from very different musical backgrounds. Like, I learned classical piano when I was a kid, but then I switched to guitar when I was around 13, and I just, like, let the classical piano slide completely, and now I can't. I'm trash at it, unfortunately. But so I kind of have this, like, I had a little bit of self-teaching and kind of more, like, rough around the edges style of playing, and I was in a couple rock bands. And Pix attended the conservatory at UKC and has a very polished...
academic way of approaching music often. We almost broke up in our first rehearsals together because I was like, this is not how we practice. We somehow got over that. Anyway, so I have a more education background, vocal performance background, and the merging of that is really special for us.
So how did you merge them together?
Love, really. Just our love for each other. Like we wanted to do more original music, but we could never quite come to, well, what is our sound? So we started saying, okay, well, what song do you like out of this? Okay, I like this. So we're trying to find our commonalities, and then that's how we started doing covers, putting our spin on it, you know, adding more folky vibe here, or doing more, we do some slides and harmonies. So just kind of adding our spin to already existing things, you know.
So you didn't end up fighting over, you wanted to cover Chopin, and you wanted to cover... I don't know, Black Sabbath or something.
We had many arguments about Evanescence. That's my favorite musical inspiration. Yes. The harmonies, the opera. Right, and I'm like, let's do these songs. And Radius is just, no, I can't wrap my head around that. So we found our compromise. 5 years later, thank goodness, we found our compromise.
Well, we have to compromise by taking a break now so we can balance things between the needs of the station and spending wonderful time with our guests. So yes, we'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the 10th Voice, and we have in the studio three wonderful guests. We have Freddie Domastar and Secondhand Something, which is musical artist Pix Timmerman and Radius Burek. And just before the break, we were talking about compromises and merging your artistic and music inspirations and loves.
Indeed. Yeah, Radius definitely has more of a rock, folky... I don't know, punk vibe about them, and I definitely have the more, let's do some harmonies here, let's make this more elegant here, or make it more nuanced here, and really combining those. Again, that's kind of what makes us special. Our repertoire is pretty eclectic.
What are your favorite songs to... I'm sorry, I want to know, After you answer, what are your favorite songs to sing? What really comes from your heart?
Solo or as a group?
Ooh.
Oh, either.
Both, because they could be totally different answers.
Yeah. My longtime go-to when I'm singing solo and trying to impress people is Angel from Montgomery by John Prine, actually. That's my, like, comfort food song that I can always rely on.
Yeah.
My favorite song to work on with the band, I have two, Square Hammer by Ghost. We do a really cool acoustic, mellow, slow burn version of that song. And also Landslide by Stevie Nicks but the Chicks is our inspiration because of the harmonies and things. And the lyrics on that one, as I'm 29 wow. for the ninth time, it really resonates with me, and every time I sing it, I feel that, like, I've been afraid of changing because I built my life around you, and that is so meaningful to me, and I think us.
Mm-hmm. That's chilling. That song played a part at several critical junctures in my life over many times. Anyways, yeah, that's...
Huh. Yeah. Yeah, Una's been a long-term Stevie Nicks fan.
Excellent. Good stuff there.
Yeah. Yeah, she actually recorded Landslide for what was going to be the second Buckingham Nicks album in the coffee plant where she and Lindsey Buckingham and the rest were performing in his father's coffee plant, which had a big open area for a studio, and it ended up being rolled into that Fleetwood Mac album. But that, we don't need to talk about music history right now.
No, you'll be here all day.
God, I'm so old.
You could have just pretended you were well-educated. Like, when I tell people I know Latin and that I learned it at school, I always tell people, not as a first language.
So I have a question for Freddie that I've been thinking of, too, as we're trying to balance out covering all the performance art is. You said you've been performing for 3 years?
Yes.
Where do you perform? You know, what venues?
Sometimes you can find me around Missy B's.
I'm at Missy B's every week, and I don't recall seeing you. I'm in the VIP booth with Nikki every Friday and Saturday.
Let's see. I don't often go on Fridays and Saturdays.
Oh,
I will admit I'm a bit of a social recluse in between performing. I find that I have to kind of recharge and such. I do need to kind of get over there on the weekends and see everyone.
Or I'll have to start going during the week.
Yeah, that might be more likely to happen.
Mm-hmm. Last week, not last Thursday, Thursday before last, I was in Smut, the Smut variety show at Missy B's, hosted by Annie Cherry. And yeah, you can just find any sort of performances there. Sometimes there's circus acts, sometimes there's mimes, you know. But
so what is your stage persona? How do you present, and what is your... what is your particular take on drag that you communicate?
Well, personally, I can, like, oof, what is English? honestly, I'm happy that you brought up drag being therapeutic, because that's part of what I put across on stage. Drag is definitely my therapy, and it is a big part of me finding myself and my identity. Because when I started drag, you know, I'm still a bit of an egg. I had always felt like something was a bit different, but I wasn't quite sure what. I never quite felt male or female, but I felt just this sort of mixture of energies. So I try to bring that to the stage with Freddie. I would call Freddie a femme king. I would call Freddie a drag iconoclast, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So I... very much men in dresses, big butch queens, you know, it's molding everything into this one sort of planet, because I also feel this sort of galactic essence with Freddie. I've, in my own life, always felt like an alien. Like, I've never really understood the social experience, so to speak. So it's been me kind of going through life and trying to figure out, what is anything? Do people secretly hate me? Am I making sense to anyone? Constantly second-guessing myself, so...
Yes.
Freddie is that part of me that doesn't care about all that and isn't really second-guessing and is just ridiculous and over-the-top, happily alien. And I try to kind of mold that all into myself.
And when you're stuck in school, you're stuck with people each day, every day, so it's hard to be sure that they like you for you, because they're forced to be there and associate with you anyway. Mm-hmm. Once you're outside of school, you can at least argue to yourself that they must actually like you, or they wouldn't go to the effort to meet up with you.
The expression I would use is like what I use for myself: they're a dragon. Like, I'll tell you after the show what that means, but it's I know that feeling of alienation, of not even belonging. Even in the trans community, I don't feel like I belong a lot of the times, because I'm trans and intersex, and there's different things I face and different challenges that I have to deal with my weird mutant body, which alarmingly does not have superpowers. All the comic books lied.
I was so disappointed when you told me you didn't have superpowers.
My superpower seems to be messing things up, but it's...
You sure that's not staying awake for long periods of time? Because doing really well at that right now.
Yeah. I think the energy in the room has woken her up and snapped her focus back to the real world.
Yes, it's,
or what passes for real.
So drag is therapy and music is therapy, both for the performers and for the audience. And
I'm interested because the three of you, all of you say that you are musical drag performers, and an awful lot of drag performers lip sync, and they do amazing performances, but they don't generate the music themselves. So how do you combine both and have the energy and the breath to perform like that? And how do you weave it into the performance when a lot of places aren't set up for the drag performers to actually do music?
What a great question.
That's a great question.
You want to answer that, Paris? Answer your version? Yeah, I can answer that fast here. I do find that there's some venues like, say, Missy B's or Hamburger Mary's sometimes, you know, that
are set up. Or Sidekicks.
Yeah, Sidekicks as well. I've performed there before, too. I forgot to mention them. And I'm kind of branching out recently. Also, I'll get back to that later.
Awesome.
There are a few venues here and there that are set up to handle vocal performances due to also having karaoke in those spaces. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you do find a good sound system. Sometimes you'll find a good sound guy that knows what they're doing and is able to really put that out. I know the experiences I've really loved are when I've been able to perform on a bigger stage with a bigger sound crowd or sound system. Case in point, as I was about to mention earlier, I recently performed at KC Pride Fest as well, and that was my first time on such a big stage like that in front of so many people, and it was just something about being in front of the monitors again that was giving me life. But yeah, it's just something about finding those venues within the city.
Awesome.
I want Radius to say something. We aren't currently doing drag for a lot of reasons, but we started doing musical drag for a few months before the pandemic happened.
Mm. Yeah, we really like live performing, and so when everybody made the transition to virtual drag, we kind of fell out of it and haven't rekindled it, but we're, doing our Secondhand Something band, and that's our creative outlet at the moment.
I will say, if you don't mind, doing drag, I had never done drag before, and I was inspired by Radius, who started doing solo drag, lip sync drag. And they did a few lip sync performances, and my persona was Carlos Mantana. Diego Ave originally, but Carlos Mantana. And I didn't know that person existed inside me. I remember Radius saying, I didn't think you were going to come out for that, and you showed up. And I was like, I feel like this is a part, Freddie has said, this is a part of me that was missing that I didn't even realize, and I had never thought to explore. I've spent so much time trying hard to perform femininity and trying to be demure and sweet and all the, traditional archetype gross things that... Mm-hmm. Whatever. And getting to be Carlos, I could take up space and not feel sorry. I could, not worry about my implied vagina of the situation and just be present. And after that, I don't even feel like I necessarily need drag anymore in that way, because I've already found the door. And I, thank all the people that helped me get there, because I don't think I would have got there by myself.
I love hearing that part of your story. Every time I get to hear it, I'm like, yes. I'm so glad drag was able to perform that role in your life. And I think you mentioned something earlier. I'm pointing at our beautiful host about how drag can sometimes be, I think you said, gateway drug into like exploring your gender more. And drag came at a time when I was really new at identifying as non-binary. And then through drag, I was like, you know, I think I'm actually more transmasculine. And so the mustache became not just a drag feature, but became something that I put on every day. For now, it's just made of mascara. One day I will grow my own, I'm sure. but it kind of vaulted me into being okay with presenting myself in a way that I had not done in my everyday life. And then it became, the line between drag and my normal persona just kind of started to blur. And now I just feel like Jacques Strap was my drag name. I feel like Jacques Strap is just integrated into my daily life. So I'm glad for even the short period of time that drag had in my life, because it just really enhanced that exploration for me.
Years ago, I read a book, and there was a line in the book about, if you don't know who you are and where you're going, practice being fictional for a while. And I think that was the sort of message and direction that it was embodying, that try being other people and see which really fits and which facets of you resonate with it.
Absolutely.
Love that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the equipment question, well, it is definitely set up lots of venues for vocals, but when you try to add live guitar, it was guitar and harmonies and voice, it becomes more challenging carrying around the amp everywhere and finding enough outlets to hook up to. So that's the reason I think we kind of transitioned out, because I don't think necessarily Kansas City was ready at the time for like musical drag. Drag had its own niche lip sync. You act one way this binary, one way this binary, and those are your choices. Mm-hmm. This binary over here is probably even preferable. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
So it was just a little, there's a little gatekeeping to trying to get in to do a new thing. To fuse ideas, you know. And I think now more and more with Freddie performing, you see more drag performers singing and oh, Regis, you wanted to say something about voice dysphoria.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't mind.
Yeah, that's a bit of a sidebar from drag.
No, well,
a little bit.
Well, we lip sync to masculine songs to give the illusion, and then when you use your own voice, it, I want to say, destroys the illusion, but definitely changes what you're expecting to hear. So that plays a role in our performance, I think.
Yeah, so as I have been... Well, first I want to say that I think gender is an ongoing creation. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm always in the state of becoming whatever my gender is. I don't know if there will be a point where I'm like, yeah, okay, this is it. I'm fixed here, and this is how I'm going to express forever and what I'm going to look like forever. I'm not sure that's part of my personal journey, and I respect when people are able to reach those kinds of goals for themselves. And having said that, I have wondered if there would come a point in my own journey where I would start to feel vocal dysphoria, because I have kind of like an alto mezzo soprano range.
But Radius sings all the high harmonies in all of our pieces. I sing the low, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah, and I've been really grateful that I haven't discovered that in myself, that I am lucky enough to not really experience voice dysphoria, unless I really think about it and I'm like, yeah, I wish I had like a low grumbly voice, but I still appreciate that upper range that I have. And so I'm curious to see how that continues to influence my music as I move through transition.
The dysphoria, it creates additional fear, too, because it's very challenging to get up on a stage for the first time in front of people, especially if you're performing. It's not a professional setting. People could make fun of you. They could throw beer bottles, I guess, or whatever. And I just wonder, how... Do you still remember the first time you got up in front of a group of everyone and took that leap of faith? I guess I'll go from this way. Freddie, do you remember your first time? Mm. Oh, that could be so provocative. Should I bleep myself? No,
oh,
too late now.
Wow. It's like
it's become part of our shared heritage.
It's been so long. So I think my first time really getting on the stage, singing in front of people, I think before I even was in a band, was like when I was in high school, before I even considered singing by myself, because I used to be very shy. I used to kind of be shouted down for singing too much around the house sometimes. But I just had a wild hair, and I wanted to try out for a school talent show. And I remember getting into the auditorium and seeing everybody auditioning, and something in me was just like, wait, no, don't do it. What are you doing? And so I was almost about to be just walk out, and somebody saw me walking out. Like, what are you doing? It's your time to audition. What are you doing? Come back. And I was just in myself. I was like, oh no, oh please no. So I got on the stage and I sang, and it was. I thought it was fine. I mean, I looked up at the ceiling the whole time, but that was the first time really singing out in the auditorium, and that did kind of spark something in me. I was like, wait, maybe I like this a bit.
I've thought that so many people in the community that are shy about living their truth, whether it is a transition of gender presentation or identity, whether it is just simply being out and proud, I think so many people would benefit from the experience of performance and learning how to, you know, I've seen horrible drag performers that own their own horribleness so much that everyone loves it and they carry themselves through. And it's just, I've known people that also have had that same total self-confidence. It really just carries through if you have this nothing can sink you type of air to it. A friend of mine who is a trans woman is to her great dismay, she's 6'4", so very broad build. It is difficult for her to have the passing privilege that she needs in her career and life in a binary world. But she has such total self-confidence and total smile, making eye contact, carrying herself through, that people don't really know. It creates an additional, just if they know, they don't care, or they even don't know. And it's amazing. It just gives you sort of a superpower. And I've really found that to be a big benefit in survival, you know, have that self-confidence. I think a lot of folks would really benefit from going through a drag camp, even if they didn't want to perform, just because it teaches you how to own the space, and also contouring.
To build on that, I think that solo performance is what's necessary, because you don't get that effect and that breaking of the shell, and that you can do this as much when, say, if you're in school choir, you're part of a group and your uniform and you're blended in, so no one's really specifically looking at you. You have to do that solo performance or as a duo, so there's still like an equal weight of attention and weight on you that gives you that confidence and lets you have that focus, I think.
Sure, definitely. I think for me, I grew up singing a lot in church choir and in high school, you know, you did state and all of that stuff, but the first time I really remember thinking, I just did that, I can do anything, it was singing in front of a bunch of freshman girls for choir. And I had to demonstrate something. And I don't know if anyone's ever sat with 30, 14, 15-year-old just staring you down, impress me teacher, new teacher, student teacher, that I was like, oh, I did that, and I owned it, and now I can do anything. I can sing in front of those kind of kids, and that will give you the confidence you need if you don't have drag as accessible to you. Because, man, those kids are critical and brutal, and they will make sure you know how they feel about you. So
there's also cool. Something else I was thinking of. I'm happy you brought up vocal dysphoria, because I think my drag is also a big part of trying to deal with my vocal dysphoria. I'm currently pre-T. I have plans to start low-dose testosterone, because I would... Basically, I want to avoid what they call the crack, which is when the voice drops with testosterone, and sometimes there is a bit of a change in the vocal range. I'm hoping to, I guess, slow that down and keep singing and record an album in the process. I'll talk about that later.
But cool.
Yes, I think a big part of, I guess, trying to work with the vocal dysphoria is allowing that sort of genderful presence that is Freddie to sing in full-on soprano range, especially when I'm recording what I call my vocalscapes, because that's what I perform to on stage. I like to make backing tracks and fill them with my own backing vocals as well. I usually do covers. And yes, that's just kind of been my way of working through the vocal dysphoria and allowing just sort of that gender variance.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was hoping to circle back to that, because I've had several friends that were very active in music and had good singing voices, and watching the pain that they went through as their voice transitioned, as they had to take breaks from performances so that they could rest their voice and have the voice be reliable when they came back, was definitely hard for them. And when singing is therapy and it's a dear love of yours, having to take a break from that when you really want some relief is hard for people. And years ago, my wife asked her best friend and me, whose voice would you have if you could have anyone's? And I said Freddie Mercury's, and both of their heads whipped round and looked at me in a, what, really? Kind of way. And it's like, his range was incredible. I mean, with a range like that, you would never have dysphoria, I think. not from your voice.
I wouldn't sound like Amy Winehouse, because her range isn't actually that great, but she owns every single hertz of her range that she's in. And I love that sort of, I can almost picture her as, I don't know, she has almost like a cat-like quality to her voice, mm-hmm. Anyways,
is her voice non-binary?
I fed you. So, to our other two guests here, I don't think we've mentioned what instruments you play for your acoustic work.
This is Radia speaking. I am the guitar player and backup voices. Yes, I have multiple of them.
I sing lead most of the time. And I kind of manage everybody. You know, it's a big deal to get everyone in one space to rehearse.
How many people are in your ensemble?
Well, we want it to be more collective-y so people can come in and out. But right now there's just three of us, Radius, myself, and Seth, who plays bass. They couldn't be here with us today, but they're an amazing bass player. Holy cow. So grateful to have them.
And we're talking related to the cello bass, or are we talking electric guitar type bass?
A bass guitar.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We're talking acoustic all about now. That bass.
Yeah. No trouble.
Nicely done.
Were you going to talk about your first experience singing, performing?
Oh.
How that made you feel?
Wow. I think probably my first main performances would have been when I was a kid as a classical piano player. I hated it, though. You get so used to, and I feel like this about any instrument, that you get used to your own, how it feels in your fingers and how it sounds when you play it, and then you get on somebody else's instrument, and you're like, oh, it's totally different. Like, I felt that with pianos, because they'd have, you know, the one grand piano set up for all the students to show off their skills. So I didn't like performing back when it was piano-oriented, but now that it's like, when I get to showcase, I especially like to showcase my guitar, and so when I get to do that, I feel like much more confident in myself than that little 4-year-old who was like trying to play classical.
Yeah, and certainly guitars, there's often a kid's size version that means that you can bridge all of the strings, but they usually only have one size of grand piano, so that would be another issue as a 4-year-old.
Yeah, that's very true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it hadn't occurred to me, not having played piano, that you would have to share everybody else's instrument, because when you've got guitar, it's really portable and easy just to lug along with you. You'd have to fight with retuning things because of different temperatures and stuff, but it's yours and you know it and it's reliable.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, the portability is, I mean, it's a two-edged sword. It's like you may be an expert at the Hammond B3, but you can't take that to the campfire. I mean,
that's true.
Well, not unless it's broken and it needs burning.
Or, oh, no. I guess you could put it in the back of a pickup or something. I love that. You got to respect. a Hammond B3 is a very steampunk instrument. I mean, it's any instrument you have to change the oil on, that's steampunk.
Yeah.
But kind of going back to the vocal dysphoria, so I mentioned earlier, like, performing femininity and needing to fill that. So a lot of the songs, Evanescence, example, a female vocalist, mm-hmm. and I would relate to the female vocalist. Mm-hmm. And now after having done drag and kind of gone through my own gender, I don't want to say transition, but just evolution, I suppose, I can sing with any pronouns, because I'm all the pronouns. I'm pansexual, and I can sing to any person. And so I've seen artists, you know, change pronouns, you know, more power to fit their personal story. But like for me, it is so empowering that I can sing any pronoun, and I can see myself in every one of those roles. You know, the person being sung to, the person singing, all of that. And I definitely give drag that credit, because before I would try to mold myself into that femininity, and now I don't feel like I even need to. It's pretty cool. It's pretty powerful.
Just as I've thought that drag performers can really help people with the confidence, presentation, and ownership of their space, that musicians can also give valuable lessons to people in the community who wish to change their voice to meet a certain gender expectation, maybe because they have to, because they work in a strongly binary environment, and it's, you know, assimilate or lose your job. And I think that a lot of people have very good lessons that they could share to help folks, like people with, like, my horrible voice.
Well, a lot of times I've been noticing in our song selection, they're masculine voices. I just take it up a whole step. And so I'm singing from a masculine perspective. And I really find that to be so powerful. And often I notice when I try to sing, you know, more female vocals, I have to take it down keys just because where my range naturally is. And so getting to play around with the key has been really powerful as well. You know, we kind of get stuck in this is how this is supposed to sound, but taking a traditionally masculine song and then taking it up three half steps, you know, changes the vibe, changes the intention.
That's having to shift both of them. Definitely seems like it fits with the non-binary vibe.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I didn't realize I was doing that until I was conscious of, like, oh wow, I am choosing these songs that are typically male and raising them and feeling empowered with that, instead of trying to, again, push myself into those. I can only sing songs done by female presenting people.
I know a lot of people in the lesbian community, when women singers started singing songs from the male perspective, the love songs to females, they were feeling like they were finally being recognized.
Yeah.
But that person that was singing could have had a male gender identity, and people were unaware of that. Mm-hmm. As I think I'm unaware of the fact that we're sneaking up on our second break.
I know, it just really crept up on us here. The conversation is so cool, but our break here has some cool things, I think. Yes, it does.
And welcome back to The Tenth Voice. We're here in the studio with Freddie, Pix, and Radius, and we've been discussing all of their music influences and what drives them, and gender identity and performance, and how they all tangle together. And it's been a great show and discussion. And just during the break, you were saying what you'd like to talk about next.
Oh, no, I'm completely blank.
I have no cards for us, darling.
Oh, yes. So the Kansas City Trans Pride March, which is coming up on October 1st at Rosedale Park. It's going to be community grassroots, putting it on and getting it going, and by local trans organizers. And you can find out more on Facebook and Instagram, I believe, at KC Trans Pride. October 1st, and we'll be performing Secondhand Something, and so will Freddie.
Yeah, we're super excited about getting to represent for the community, and music plays a huge role, like we've been discussing, in bringing people together and therapy, and, you know, there's nothing like singing a group song with 500 of your favorite people and coming together, and we're really excited to get to facilitate that a little bit.
Very bad, very bad. It's just being surrounded by, you know, other people like you, being surrounded by your family, and feeling the energy and the vibe there, being able to march together and enjoy the music as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Paris, have you given any thought to what you're going to
perform?
Ah, I am still thinking. I'm usually fond of performing In the Next Life by Kim Petras.
Ooh.
Honestly, it kind of adds a second layer if I... You know, just I like to perform music from other trans artists as well.
Yes.
It's something I'm usually fond of doing. It's like kind of... how would I put it? Just sort of not shifting the perspective, but it's also just embracing the different parts of the trans and non-binary spectrum.
Are you familiar with Shea Diamond?
Ooh. I'm going to have to check out Shea Diamond.
I can give you a couple songs by them. They are a trans person of color who has some very powerful songs that we've played many times on this show.
Yes.
Amazing.
I love that.
How does it feel for you? Because growing up, it doesn't sound like you had a lot of representation and forerunners to follow. And now you're going to be up there at the march, and whenever you're performing, being that representation and a model for other people.
It really does mean a lot, because you said it all right there. Growing up, I really didn't see anybody like myself, especially when I was trying to find who I was. You know, when I was younger, I didn't really know about nous-trois identity or being, you know, trans-masculine and yet not necessarily trans-male, and kind of figuring out what that all meant to me and how it all wrapped up. And so it means a lot to me to be that first representation, because I find myself saying, you know, I'm nous-trois, and there are still people saying, oh, I've never met a nous-trois person before. I've never heard of that. What does that mean? You know?
Yeah. And so many of the terms are evolving and being generated day by day, even. Fear spec and mere spec are fairly new, and they're so representative of the toxicity in our culture and having enforced gender roles on us that I think they're amazing.
It's also changed drag quite a bit, where I've seen in just the 11 some years that I've been going to performances or going to clubs that have performances, where you have performers that are presenting femme in dress but with a beard and, you know, other facial hair, and the community seems to be very highly divided. It's often along age lines. Over about age 40 to 45, I have to virtually slap down my friends and say, What did you just say? Did you actually say that bigoted, and I put a lot of curse words in, I can't use on the radio stuff here in my presence? I mean, where's the hate coming from? And those that are under that age just say, hey, it's awesome. They're singing great. They're performing. The rest doesn't really matter. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's true hate, but sort of like assimilation over so long of their lives that it's just different and strange and scary. You know, kind of like
Mondays. Mondays are different and strange and scary.
Yeah. It's I have a lot of friends like Heidi that are, you know, kind of led the charge, I think, at Missy B's. But I think drag will continue to evolve. People kind of thought it didn't, you know, it wasn't, there were drag kings as far back as the 1800s, but they were sort of pushed off to the side. They were kind of a curiosity. But now, you remember when we did the show with all the drag kings on here? We had,
yes,
Dick Van Dyke and Buttweiser and a couple others.
Yeah, who, unfortunately,
that was a fantastic show. And the audience and ourselves learned an awful lot. I know I learned an awful lot.
Yes, because it's usually the queens that get the attention. And it's usually a specific type of queen.
Absolutely.
You mentioned Paris is Burning. There's very different representation in that,
yes,
and totally different culture. And getting to see that and see it embraced and more widespread and accepted instead of just being within an enclave of New York, it's got to have been so freeing for so many people in the community.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because I've gone from, I guess, watching also Tu Wong Fu, mm-hmm, Thanks for,
yeah,
Everything, Julie, mm-hmm, Newmar, and other things like that, Priscilla,
mm-hmm,
and
Priscilla
later
the desert,
catching all of Drag Race and seeing that, you know, there wasn't really that representation even still during those times. And until recently, you know, just alt drag even is kind of coming up.
Dragula.
Dragula, yes. The Boulay Brothers Dragula.
Yes. They allow AFABs to compete, exactly. Which is a big deal. We watch lots of RuPaul and other kinds of drag, and just like, where are the AFABs here, you know? And I am loving seeing the evolution of drag. How dare we think it would be a stagnant thing? It has to evolve. We're evolving, right?
Yeah, because for so long it was very much a stereotype and even became a pastiche of itself without seeming to do it deliberately in the ironic, cool way. Mm-hmm. So it was at risk, I think, of becoming socially irrelevant and disappearing out of the community, which would have been a shame.
Even RuPaul's had to evolve over time. You know, you can easily find a dozen very transphobic statements they made in the past, yet they really seem to have come around and understood. And I don't think at heart they were transphobic, but it had to do with the time they were assimilated in and not thinking, not really giving the proper respect that was due to people, and not thinking, but more just reacting. And
I think a lot of people, when they said something very public and possibly very publicly stupid, they feel that they have to stand by it because otherwise
like
they'll
Boy George.
Look two-faced and that they've got... But if they back off and recant on it, everyone's going to think they're being wishy-washy and stuff, or they're just bowing to public pressure and they don't really feel that. It takes a certain amount of maturity to say, I was wrong, I've learned that I was wrong, and hopefully I'm going to do better in the future, and I'm not just saying this so my publicist will stop telling me to keep my mouth shut.
But didn't you know we're in post-truth America after 4 years of Trump openly lying and half the country voting for him? I mean...
We might have been in post-truth America already, otherwise they wouldn't have been able to come to power. We just didn't realize it.
Well, that's
a good point,
yeah. America was hungry for a lie.
Comfortable lies that we tell ourselves and that other people tell ourselves
what
people want.
I really can't eat that entire tray of fudge brownies and I'm not going to gain weight. I just know I won't.
Well, if you do it when you're stressed, it doesn't count, right?
Yes, or you put the fudge brownies on a really high shelf and the calories get scared and jump out, and then you
can't. I haven't tried that one. I'm going to have to try that next.
Now, usually I end up on the floor with the empty pan at my feet crying and saying, what did I do?
You forgot the usual quote, which is, I'm a monster.
I'm a monster. Don't look at me.
We've only got about 5 minutes left, so I'd really like if each of you could give your social media contacts, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or however people can get hold of you and find out your next events.
Fet Life, you know.
I'll only play that if I like you.
Well, out of all the people out there in Radioland, there's probably someone out there that you would like.
I don't know.
Kind of picky?
Just a tad. Pick this one, though. Points at Radius.
I made it. You can find Secondhand Something on our very new, as of a couple days ago,
Read Facebook, as shiny.
Yeah, Facebook page that probably has 3 likes by now. But yeah,
we say we like to focus on the present, and so we don't have a lot of videos or pictures of us because we're so invested in the moment, really just... We haven't had a photographer come look at us.
Yeah, read as we don't have the right equipment.
Yeah, yeah. We're very good, though, we promise.
Yeah, and so we're going to get that Facebook page a little more filled out in the future, and we'll be updating, you know, as we have stuff to update about. Yeah. Freddie?
Oh, you can find me on my Instagram at Freddie_Dalma_star, where I've just got basically my shenanigans, where I'm performing. You can also find me on YouTube if you search Freddie Dalma Star. That's all of my digital shenanigans during when the panini kind of happened and we were all kind of forced to hunker down. The Panera. So I'm also going to be going back to my YouTube and adding more things soon because I plan to start on Twitch soon.
Oh, cool.
It's also the Freddie Dalma Star. But I also have Facebook, where I am Paris Nick Star. I respond to both Paris and Freddie out of drag, but in drag it's just Freddie. But it just works.
Well, I'm looking at your Facebook, but I just became the fifth person to like secondhand
Yay!
Something.
Yay! while we're on this...
As soon as we're off the air, I'll probably be the sixth. Some of our listeners beat us to it.
I wanted to say, too, that you can find, again, the Trans Pride March information on Instagram. It's KC Trans Pride. And on Facebook, it's KC Trans Pride Community. If you want to donate or ask questions, please go there and we'll make sure you get everything taken care of.
Yeah, because that's a march by the community
yes.
and for the community.
Yes, absolutely.
So, I mean, there's big strides being made in Kansas City recently with the Pride event in the summer actually being a Kansas City event now instead mm-hmm. of an external company.
Yes.
But this is by the trans and non-binary community
absolutely.
For the community.
There's very little commodification, trying to keep it low capitalism, no capitalism, more focused on voices and experiences and coming together and less about tickets or vendors or, you know, that kind of stuff. Getting back to our picnic roots, you know what I mean?
Kettle corn.
Oh, kettle corn, definitely.
Oh, yeah. Are you bringing that? You coming? You bringing me some kettle corn?
Maybe I'll set up an Omo rice stand.
I just want to ask Una if there's anything you wanted to say at the last minute.
I'd like to say that I thought this was a very educational and fun show. Edutainment, is what they said. And I would really enjoy having all three of you back again to talk further about everything about your art and what's going on. We could even do live music
yes.
or live performance here in the
yeah.
studio if you would like. So
you don't know what you're asking.
Yeah, we're in.
Awesome.
I do want to add before we go too far in that you all out there are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Fiona, do you have any closing thoughts about what's coming up next or thanking our guests? I want to thank you all very much for being here, of course.
Oh, we're yes. so honored to be here.
So honored.
Awesome. Yeah. It's been an honor having you on. I love talking about gender beyond the binary and how it affects everyone and how the binary affects us. So I've been delighted to have you on today and I'd love to have you back.